chamber project.
Target Iraq,
the road to possible war.
Showdown with Saddam.
Echo chamber project. The making of a documentary about the pre-war performance of the mainstream media that uses the latest technologies for collaboration and citizen journalism. Hello, and welcome to the first podcast for the Echo Chamber Project. My name is Kent Bai, and I'm the director of the Echo Chamber Project, which is an open source documentary taking a look at how the television news media became an echo chamber to the countdown towards war in Iraq, and how I'm producing the film collaboratively using the internet. I hope to provide some viable alternatives to the way that media is traditionally produced by the gatekeepers. So instead of having a small team of editors sift through the 80 hours of footage and releasing it as a film that you passively consume, what I'm doing is creating a web-based editing system using Drupal so that you'll be able to actually help edit sequences of sound bites together, which could potentially be included in the final film. And so I've conducted 76 interviews up to this point, and I'm going to be start slowly releasing some of the audio of those interviews. And at the end of this interview with Jeff Jarvis of BuzzMachine.com, I'll be talking a little bit more about what you can do to get more involved, as well as looking forward to some of the other interviews that I've conducted. Okay, so why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and your website.
I'm Jeff Jarvis. I blog at BuzzMachine.com.
Okay, and so if you were to give a metaphor for the existing media infrastructure and what that metaphor is going to be transitioning
into. I'm not sure we know where media coverage in Iraq is going to go, but the citizen, in general.
And also I'm focusing on the build-up to the military intervention.
Okay, fine. We've seen the explosion of media. Choice has brought explosion in media, and I think it's a good thing. We've seen the ability of citizens to get far more choice in their consumption of media, and now citizens can create media and can join in the conversation. So I really believe that news is turning into a conversation. That's a good thing.
Okay, and if you were to sort of look at the television news media leading up to the war in Iraq, how would you sort of characterize that coverage?
Pardon me. A second here. Michael Moore moment. I'm not licking my hair. It's actually hard to remember back to the coverage coming up. I think the coverage going up to the war in Iraq was probably not skeptical enough. I'm not sure that there was the basis for reporting that was possible to report what was true and what was not. I think you can really trace back, though, that era to 9/11. And even though Iraq and Osama bin Laden are not related, there still was a new attitude in the country and thus in the media about the Middle East and terrorism and spreading democracy in the Middle East and threats to us and so on and so forth. So it changed the tenor of media from 9/11 on.
And when you talk about the explosion of television, what do you mean by that?
In the mid-80s, I was a TV critic at People magazine, and when we had this explosion of choice happen. The remote control gave us control, then the cable box, then the VCR, now the TiVo. So we get to control what we watch on TV. Now comes the internet, with an absolute infinite explosion of sources of news and diverse viewpoints.
And talk a little bit about the decentralization aspect of this new media.
It's often said that we had a grand shared experience of media. That really lasted only about three decades, from the time from the mid-50s to the mid-80s when three networks killed newspapers and we had three networks and one newspaper towns. Now media is returning to its natural water level, which is a huge amount of choice. And yes, we do fragment, but I think that's great. That means that we can watch what we want to watch and read what we want to read. Now, does that mean that we're in an echo chamber? I actually don't think so. In blogs, I see people linking to that with which they disagree, not just with which they agree. And I think that's a healthy thing. And in general, no, we're seeing more voices, more viewpoints, and together, I think that leads to more information and more knowledge.
And so one of the things that I looked at building up to the war in Iraq was after the congressional authorization was passed in October, there was sort of this consensus in Congress where both the Democrats and Republicans essentially agreed, and the media served as an echo chamber to the executive branch after that point. So what do you do when you have the political consensus in Congress, but not necessarily you have a more thriving debate
on
the ground?
It's hard to deal with areas where you can't report. reporters didn't know what was going on in Iraq even more than the government didn't know what was going on in Iraq. And so it's hard then to be a good check on a factual basis. I think that we could have had more debate, more dialogue, more conversation about the war and about things beforehand. I'm an old 60s pacifist who actually favored the war, but not for the White House's reasons, but for humanitarian reasons. And the belief that this was a despot we had to help get rid of. We should have planned better. There were a lot of issues that we could have dealt with better in the media, and we didn't. I think we learned a lot.
But do you think that there's nonviolent alternatives to war using this new communications technology as shown potentially in Iran?
I don't know. As I say, I was a 60s pacifist until I was at the World Trade Center on September 11th. And so what I said after that was my generation faced our Hitler. And we saw someone who, in fact, does need to be stopped, and I need to protect my children. And so I changed my view of war just because of 9/11, because of watching that tower be hit by the jets and watching it fall. And so I'm not sure. I really don't know. I wish, I for years believed that we had to have alternatives to war and that we had to use only those alternatives. I no longer believe that's the case. And I think that we have to be cautious, ever cautious about using them, but those options and those necessities are there.
And do you see that there's, with human beings, sort of this underlying metaphor that we're all human, you all have this human machinery, but we have different software of worldviews and world beliefs, or do you believe that people can really truly be evil?
Could it be evil or?
Evil.
Yes, evil, as we know, can be banal, but yes, I do believe there is an evil. Watching the World Trade Center was evil in action, no question about it. That was evil. Yes, I witnessed evil that day firsthand. So yes, I believe that's absolutely possible. But I also believe that we're all essentially humans, and we all share the same needs for freedom and for choice, and that I do believe that democracy is a God-given right that people should have in this world. And so I think what's happening with media is that citizens' media, blogs, and things like that are spreading the means of spreading democracy. So you have Hossein Darakhshan Hodor in Iran, who's really changed his country single-handedly with blogs. You have blogs started up in Iraq. You have blogs now started up in Bahrain and Egypt and Saudi Arabia and China. And this is a wonderful thing because this can't be controlled by a monolithic media and a monolithic government. It is the people talking. What the people are inevitably going to say is that they want to control their lives. And they have the right to control their lives.
And finally, if you were to paint sort of a picture of what this new media ecosystem is going to look like in, say, 2 to 5 years, how is that going to affect both the politics, the culture of America, as well as the media?
I don't think we've seen the end game yet in the changes in media. I'm fond of saying that my first rule of media and life is that if you give the people control of media, they will take it. If you don't give them control, you will lose them. And I think we have to look not just at media where this is occurring, but also in marketing and in politics. I don't think here at the Personal Democracy Forum we've yet seen nearly the end game of the people taking over their political process, and I do believe that'll happen.
Okay.
This interview with Jeff Jarvis of BuzzMachine.com was recorded on May 16th, 2005 at the Personal Democracy Forum. And I'm not sure if I agree totally with Jeff Jarvis's assessment that, you know, he wasn't sure that there was a basis to report what was true and what was not. We were able to speak to at least three journalists who had been able to talk to intelligence analysts who were disagreeing with the line that was coming from the Bush administration. And so it was certainly possible to do that. Two of which are Jonathan Landay and Warren Strobel of Knight Ridder, and here are a couple of excerpts from the interviews that we conducted with them as a way to look forward to see what else you can expect from future podcasts from the Echo Chamber project.
A lot of very large media, television, and newspapers have just gotten used to getting handouts and therefore have lost the fire in the belly. In our case, you know, we don't have access to the senior officials that these other large media have had, do have, and it required us to scramble, but it was good in a way because we were able to sort of go below their level, to the level where there wasn't this political agenda, where people were truly bothered by what was going on, and find people who were willing to talk to us.
We had people talking to us, sort of, as you said, the blue-collar workers. We tend to call them the professionals. And when I say professionals, I mean intelligence analysts, uniformed military and U.S. diplomats who were expert in Iraq, expert in the Middle East, had done this stuff their whole careers, and they kept telling us over and over again that their views were being ignored, that the process was being politicized, that strange things were going on, that a separate, almost alternate government was being set up, different reporting channels, and so on and so forth. And I think what happened is they were talking to other members of the media as well. Obviously, they just didn't come to Knight Ridder. They went to others, but we took them a lot more seriously. We followed up very aggressively on what they had to say. And in the end, we found that their version of reality was more accurate than the version of reality that the White House was trying to put out.
So that was Jonathan Landay and Warren Strubble of Knight Ridder. They actually won an award for some of their pre-war coverage concerning the intelligence that was being used to justify the military intervention in Iraq. So we've clearly covered a lot of grounds with the Echo Chamber Project, and I'm looking forward to releasing more of these audio interviews as podcasts. And what I hope to also do is have a internet interface ready so that you can get more involved with the project, help edit sequences together for the final film that's going to be produced as a result of all this audio footage that I've gathered. So there's going to be two feeds with the Echo Chamber Project podcast. One feed will be the interviews. It'll be the raw footage and interviews that I've conducted here. The second feed will be the community feed, where I'll have more conversations with people who are involved with the technology to help build up the back end to get a lot more people involved. So you can go to echochamberproject.com/volunteer, and I'll try to keep that page updated with the latest things that you can do to help out and get more involved. And I'd also should note that this audio in this interview is licensed underneath the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. And until next time, this is Kent Bai with the Echo Chamber Project.
Echo Chamber Project.